another kind of question about that. There's so much in it. I mean, the botany, the Latin, the obviously all the stuff that you're familiar with, the outdoor part. But then even there's a lot of references to Bible, Chinese philosophy, poetry. Like, is that all, is that based on your education or self-taught, or where does all that come from?
A little bit of each, yeah, mostly just my reading, and I would read about places I've been, and, you know, I just threw a lot of layers to this first novel, a lot of layers, and they were all just things I'm interested in, you know. It's kind of like, what did we used to call that in college, when you're trying to write a 20-page paper when you only have 5 pages of ideas, and yeah.
And Rosemary, you are all over the place. You're working literally all over the world, often in very remote camps. You're coming down to Haines, I understand, to be working with Anthony Krupe and some bear surveys, right? Coming up.
Yes.
So what's your process? Are you writing on a notebook in a tent somewhere, or do you?
Yeah, basically. Okay. Yeah.
Like every night when you're done, or mornings, or.
I keep a journal. Usually when I'm working a job, and then this manuscript, Cold Latitudes, came out of a series of journal entries. I did an artist residency in California, where for a couple months I just collated all the entries and expanded them. But they've all started as journal entries.
And then your work, you know, between the short stories and then going to the essays, how is that going in between? Have you found one more satisfying the other, or different reasons to use fiction or nonfiction when you're working? How do you decide to make those choices?
In some ways, I prefer fiction. I started out as a fiction writer, and I still kind of think of myself as one. It's easier to explore what people are thinking, kind of to explore deeper questions about life when you're not writing about real people, because there's less chance of hurting them. But Cold Latitudes, I felt, was a book that needed to be, and it needed to be nonfiction. What I was trying to do there was humanize science. I've been privileged to work with so many fascinating local people and cutting-edge researchers, and I felt like I needed to... are you still there?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
We're here.
Froze for a second. I felt like I needed to bring those stories to a wider audience. And I did the best I could to tell them as accurately as I possibly could. So that particular story needed to be nonfiction, but in general, I prefer fiction.
What do you hope that people, when they read Cold Latitudes, what do you hope that they take away from it? Is there a couple of things that you'd really like people to know?
Maybe an increased appreciation for the beauty and complexity of the world that we live in, and an increased realization of how fragile it is. I think climate change is the basis of almost all these essays, but I've seen it firsthand. It's not something that I can doubt anymore or doubt the validity of the research that's gone into it. And I just want people to see that as I've seen it.
Yeah, and I think too, listeners think, oh, it's kind of science stuff. It's sort of climate changing. I mean, there's a lot of they're ripping good stories. I mean, the story of the tug and the barge and the people that you meet and are associated with. I mean, it's a great book to pick up almost any essay. There's a good story in there too. So don't sell yourself short on the differences between fiction and nonfiction. There's plenty of stories in here that are really both inspiring and heartbreaking, some of them.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
They were exciting stories to live also.
Yeah, I'm just glad you're okay half the time. I'm glad you're here. Your father probably is too.
Oh, yeah. We treasure certain, like, phone calls from Rosemary. One, I think it was a 4th of July morning, there was a message on the phone saying, well, the boat burned to the waterline, but we all got off okay. And that, and things like that. what about the one when there was the earthquake out on, when you were out in Attu at the very end of the Aleutians, and
yeah,
you had to get the scientists off? And yeah, we got a little message about that one too. And it was like, oh my God. You know?
Well, And Tom, so before we go, we've got Aaron Davidman waiting. I could talk to you guys for like an hour, and I'm looking forward to your reading again at the bookstore in Haines on June 30th, 4 to 5. And Rosie will be here in person, and Tom, and doing a reading and signing their books so you can get them for all your friends and relatives. But what do you, just a quick before we go, what do you hope people get from Stellar's Orchid? And I will say, by the way, that I know more than one person who said it's not only just their favorite Alaska novel, but one of their favorite novels ever.
Boy, that makes me feel real good to hear that, of course. But yeah, actually, what I'm striving to do is not far from what Rosemary described, not with the climate thing so much, because it's Stellar's Orchid is historical, but just the feeling of the country and the value in the country, and how one of the things my main character, John Lars, learned was, you know, he went into it as beginning as a, you know, wealthy young guy from an Ivy League school, and he finds that these people he meets are smarter in many cases, faster, more decisive. They know things he can't possibly know, and just the wonder of this new world for him and the value of it.
Well, that's a perfect place to end. Must be a novelist. Well, thank you. Thanks very much, Rosemary, for joining us again. Rosie's book is most recent one is Cold Latitudes, and Tom's is Stellar's Orchid, and they are available at both the Skagway News Depot and the Haines Bookstore and the libraries in Haines and Skagway as well. So check them out. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Tom. Thank you, Rosemary. And thank you, Heather. And we'll be right back with the second part of Art Matters in just a moment. Thanks again to the Talking Heads for bringing us into the second part of Art Matters this morning. And now we've got Heather Lundy and Aaron Davidman.
And Aaron Davidman. Welcome, Aaron.
Thank you.
And I'm going to introduce Aaron, and then I think we'll read a little from your latest work, and then we'll have a chit-chat. And Aaron Davidman is an award-winning and much-acclaimed playwright, actor, director, and producer. Who says that he's drawn to stories of ethnic history and cultural complexity that challenge our assumptions of the other. For instance, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, as well as guns in America. His play, Wrestling Jerusalem, commissioned by Theater J and supported in part by the Sundance Institute Theater Program, received its world premiere at the Intersection for the Arts in San Francisco and 2014 to critical acclaim, and he's toured all over, including the Guthrie Mosaic Theater of D.C. and numerous venues,
including
Broadway,
Juno,
including the Chilcot Center in Haines. You were here as well, and It also became a film that has been shown here as well, and many, many other places at this point. And Aaron not only plays all the parts in Wrestling Jerusalem, the New York Times says he embodies them. Indeed, he embodies more than a dozen men and women affected by decades of conflict between the Israelis and the Palestinians. And his first line is, "It's complicated." But that doesn't mean that nothing is gamed, the New York Times critic continued, quoting, "The stories in Wrestling Jerusalem help to humanize issues too often spoken of in terms of land and politics. Important work, since every step forward, no matter how slight, is worth something." And Aaron particularly has designed a unique post-show facilitated conversation program for Wrestling Jerusalem and also for his latest piece. And what happens is there's conversations afterwards where people from all different backgrounds can discuss issues in a safe space. And it's a multiple perspective to these things that he's also brought to Google execs, universities, congregations, different groups on either side of issues. And he's been praised as a person who is an expert at those kind of facilitated discussions about issues that we often don't get together on. And his latest work is called, Aaron, what's the title of it? Ghost Town Bardo. And it's a play, again. And it's we're going to have a reading and a conversation at the Chilkat Center on July 8th, right? At 7:30. The Haynes Arts Council is sponsoring that. And the show is, the synopsis is that after a decade as a soldier, a U.S. veteran looks to understand the complexities of violence, firearms, and the myth of American individualism. It's very current. And as a follow-up to Wrestling Jerusalem, Aaron is now tackling another subject that is very, very difficult without easy answers and much polarization, America's passion for guns. From the Wild West to Iraq, from a VA hospital to the streets of Chicago, it's intimate, searing, and it follows the story of an American warrior grappling with his ghosts in search of peace within himself. Big, big topics, Aaron. How do you do it? I guess we're going to hear a little bit from you, right?
I have a little something to share. I do not consider myself an expert at these things, but I certainly...
You've been praised as one by the people who work with you. And I also want to say that Aaron lives in Haines and in Berkeley, California, and so is a neighbor here as well. So that's kind of cool to have you here.
Yeah, and I'm excited to speak with you after the reading we're going to do on the 8th. And it's a work in progress reading, so we can talk more a little bit about what that means.
Yeah.
But it's not a finished piece. And it's a way to air it out and give it a test drive, which I'm going to do right now for a little, just 3 minutes.
Yes, please do. I think if people hear and you can set it up for us and explain a little bit about how you do this.
Well, this is simply a few minutes from the new play. It's one character. This is not multiple characters like Wrestling Jerusalem. This is one character. We kind of go deep and long on this one.
Mm-hmm.
It's one guy sharing his life story, and this is one little piece of it. And I'll just read it. At the VA, there was a nurse. She had blue eyes the color of ocean, dark hair, smoky voice. She could have been a movie star. Maybe in another lifetime, she was. She was the one person in the room when I finally came around. I'm in a drugged up haze. She's standing beside the bed. I think maybe I'm dreaming. I ask her name. She says, Athena. I say, are we in Greece? She says, no, baby. We're in the VA in Kentucky. I say, what are we doing in the VA in Kentucky? She says, you've been wounded and you're recovering from surgery. I say, never mind me, baby. Why is the goddess of war working in the VA in Kentucky? She smiles, doesn't miss a beat. She says, honey, the goddess of war looks after all her heroes. and she squeezes my hand. I swoon, a broken swoon. She leaves the room to get the doctors. I can smell her trace on my hand to this day. Ares, the god of war, is the patron of violence. He inspires bloodlust, slaughter. His sister, Athena, the goddess of war, is the patron of the just fight. She inspires wisdom, intellect. She is the strategic side of war. Ares, the raw force of war. When I was young, I knew Ares. Ares was my patron. Ares is the violent patron of young men. I got in fights in high school. Nobody beat me. It's not that I was big. In fact, I was a bit smaller than a lot of the guys. It's not that I was even that strong. The football players, the jocks, they were stronger. It's about what you're willing to do, how far you're willing to take it. Because if you fight me, I will kill you. That was my attitude. And thankfully, I did not kill anybody in high school, but I did not have the control to know where the limit was. On my first tour, Ares had me. I was young. I was excited. I'm very lucky I did not get killed. On my second tour, things changed. I had to get smart. I had to get strategic. I was a little older. I had men under my command. Athena became my patron. Ares wanted to make me a hero. Athena wanted to keep me and my men alive. Athena wanted us to make it back home. Athena didn't actually care if we were heroes.
Okay, Aaron, so how do you go about writing this and researching this as somebody that hasn't been on a tour or involved in that directly, I don't think, from your background? So what's the process here?
I'm not a veteran. Well, I spent quite a bit of time traveling the country talking to people about guns all over the country, firearms. And a number of different people I talked to were veterans. And this particular character emerged out of a seed of one of those conversations. And then I've woven together various threads around guns and gun violence in America through my research and through my conversations into this particular narrative, this particular story of this veteran who's trying to understand how violence and firearms has impacted him in his life as a middle-aged man.
And so then portraying this story of a person, you know, with all the complexities that go along, not the neat lines that you get on a op-ed piece or on a social media post when people are arguing or whatever. What do you hope to accomplish?
So I want to inspire a deeper public conversation about violence and firearms in our culture that too often gets reduced to policy issues, gun rights or gun regulation. Which side are you on?
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's it's reductive, and it's not productive. That it's a long, complex story in this country, and there's a rich and meaningful conversation to be had to try to better understand how we're all impacted.
So when you're talking to people, and then you're bringing that research into a piece, a play, a film. I know this is also in process as a film, I understand.
Yeah.
Were there conversations, were there moments with people that you met that just really struck you, that are on sort of both sides, or, you know, that illustrate this point that you somehow wove into the fictional conversation? I mean, were you in one place that really hit you with something that was, that you were, gave you a greater understanding of the issue of guns in America, and then another place or different voices that just keep floating up?
I mean, there's so many, Heather. I mean, I had dozens and dozens of people. I mean, the first one that comes to mind, and this didn't necessarily, I don't think this was actually wound up in this piece. I mean, there's two plays. There's another play called The Shooting Gallery that mm-hmm. I wrote that is more like Wrestling Jerusalem. It's 20 different perspectives. It's 20 different actors. It's a much bigger play. Mm-hmm. We can't do the reading here. It's too big. but one of the characters is a surgeon, African-American woman in Atlanta who pulls bullets out of bodies every day. You know, what's her perspective?
Yeah.
Where did she come from? Uh-huh. You know, another is the head of the gun unit for the LAPD.
Uh-huh.
What is he dealing with trafficking? Another is a gang, former gang member in Boyle Heights, Los Angeles. And sort of, you know, he had a gun when he was 9 years old. So, you know, those characters didn't make it into this play, but they inform my deeper understanding of how guns and gun violence are kind of a part of the fabric of American culture and how deep and long it goes, you know. I mean, there's also gun manufacturers to understand their perspective of, you know, there's a family-run company, you know, in Iowa that is in the other play, and they're, you know, make these beautiful handmade hunting rifles, and it's a family tradition. So there's a lot to discuss.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, on the Alaskan side of it, it's often, you know, this hunting, the right of the individuals, you know, people tend to not talk as much about gun violence as gun rights, you know. And I wonder if that sort of Western ethos makes it into any of the discussion.
I mean, I think to me it feels like city and rural are two different conversations around gun rights and gun violence and gun regulation. You know, and that's one of the hardest parts of the sort of from a policy side is the needs for safety are so different in rural environments and versus, you know, urban environments. And mm-hmm. so that's just difficult. This particular big, you know, Ghost Town Bardo is a little more personal, intimate, and poetic way to try to understand in one person's life, in one person's body, emotional, spiritual, their journey in relationship to a culture of violence, not just firearms. I mean, firearms, I feel like what happens is we get stuck on policy issues. And we get stuck on ideas of, you know, freedom versus tyranny, you know?
Yeah.
But the reality is that we're all complex human beings. And here's a story of one human being who has a very complicated, nuanced, long history of relationship to violence and warriorship. I mean, his father teaches him about what it means to be a warrior as a young boy. And he's sort of brought into that path. And what does that mean for a young man in America? So, you know, ideas around masculinity and around, you know, violence and around individualism and the sort of myth of the Wild West and like all these things play into the conversation. And too often the conversation gets reduced to, you know, are you for guns or against guns? And I just don't think that goes anywhere. And we can go on a journey with a character who's really soul searching because Heather, we're all soul searching, you know. We're all soul searching in some way or another to try to find out how we fit in all this.
Yeah, we just had Rosemary and Tom. Both their books very much have a lot of heart and soul searching in them and in very different ways. But yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
You just so listen to a song on the radio, too.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about.
Well, and I just feel like that's the common denominator. So if we can find our common denominator, I mean, that's why, you know, when you're initial description of my work, what I'm drawn to is this, you know, the way we approach the other. And I feel like we other each other way too much. And if we can understand our common, what's the common denominator? Like we're all soul searching. Then we can have a different kind of conversation. And that's what's interesting to me.
Right. But now in like Wrestling Jerusalem, you know, that you had a really moving scene where there's a woman that also talking about historical trauma, the trauma of mm-hmm. of being afraid as she's looking into her child's eyes,
yeah.
and that fear just from her very breast milk to her baby is transferred.
That's
and that
right.
child grows up hating and fearing the other. That's, you know, the Israeli mother has the same thing happening as the Palestinian mother, and it just becomes you know, systemic.
That's right.
And we were talking now a lot in, again, in Alaska, of the historical trauma of, you know, the residential schools was on the radio yesterday. There's another horrific discovery in Canada today, but then also just the years of trauma and how that's affecting the current totally. Generations. And it's very difficult to even open those wounds for many people.
That feeds right into the story of race and slavery and, you know, the legacy of slavery in our country.
All of those things.
The African-American community.
And the urban-rural divide and all of it. It fits there. But the question I have is, like, after writing and performing, you know, Wrestling in Jerusalem so many times and talking about it so many times, you know, I've heard you say at the end, you know, What do you think, Aaron? What's going to happen? Is it going to be solved? And you just sort of go, I mean, how do you think, taking a look at, you know, what's your hope for your plays about guns in America? What do you think will happen? Will it just show the differences, or will we be able to come to something?
I'm not running for office, you know, and I'm a writer and an artist, and my role is to try to hold the conversation, try to hold us to a standard of a more meaningful conversation around around understanding of our identity and our relationship to these issues. And so I feel like that's our art's role is to reflect back to us and allow us to imagine, because Heather, change has to come via imagination. But if we never exercise our imagination, if we're just stuck in what is, and we right. just look at the facts, ma'am, nothing changes. So we must often kind of exercise the muscle of imagination. We have to imagine and dream. And there's a whole, I mean, this piece has a whole thread of dreams.
Well, the Bardo, right, that That's title right. is indicative of yeah. of dreams. And it's dreaming big, and also the empathy factor. You know, when you take it one human being at a time, it becomes much different than the issue.
I think theater artists would all agree that they're all empathy workers. That's, you know, creating well-rounded characters. I mean, you know, on stage or in film is supposed to elicit empathy, because that's how we kind of channel our best selves mm-hmm. is when we empathize with the other.
And Marley's a theater guy. Are you waiting to ask Aaron a question?
No, I was like just going to agree.
Because that's your background, is in theater.
Yeah, and that was one of the parts that I found most fulfilling about theater, is instilling that empathy and the goal of trying to share that with other people and to get provide, you know, share that empathy, but also to get more people to empathize in general.
Yeah,
the thing too, I noticed, I mean, the difference with, I'd say, what's also interesting to me, you know, novelists and essayists, someone will take their book, like Rosemary's or Tom's, and you read it privately. You process it privately. It's all a private processing that is just between you and the author. It's relatively intimate and very private. Theater, you're in a group of people. You have an intermission where people talk. You leave with somebody that's just had this same experience you have. It's like reading out loud in your house to your partner, you know. But and there's a power in that that is very is there's a power in both of them. But it's a really being in the room with people, that group, and watching faces or reactions are changing. I mean, it makes each performance even new.
Well, and we haven't had it for 18 months now, because we haven't been together in a room.
Right.
So, and what is it? It's ritual. Mm-hmm. You know, it's community ritual. It's not that different than you know, Sunday service in church, or the Saturday service in synagogue, or the service in mosque. It's a way to come together around story, mm-hmm. and it's participatory.
Yeah. So we have just a minute left, but I did want to just ask you about the process of for the reading on the 8th. So you mentioned that it's a work in progress. So what does that mean? Like,
what it means is that writers, you know, who write a book don't have to go through this.
Right. Torture. I never let anybody read anything that I've written before. It's
torture,
like,
but
done,
it's because it's meant to be live performed. I need that live feedback. Meaning, I don't necessarily need the verbal feedback. I just need the feedback of the room itself. And what it feels like to air it out, and what it feels like to be live in front of a room full of people. It informs so much about it, even as it's unfinished.
And okay. You can see that on July 8th here at the Chilicat Center in the lobby.
7:30. And if you want to know more,
followed by a Q&A with
me, yes. And also, if you want to know more about Aaron, what's your website, Aaron, that people can go to?
AaronDavidman.com.
Yeah, and you can see all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, and Wrestling Jerusalem actually is streaming on Amazon Prime.
Great.
The film, if anyone wants to check
yes,
it out.
Yes, I recommend it. Okay, thank you.
And with that, we'll have
to
sign off. Thanks for tuning in to KHNS, Haynes, Skagway, and Clockwan. You can find Art Matters, this episode, on our website within the hour. Thanks, and here's the World Cafe.
They share. June is Pride Month, and Michael's picked out songs by three different